Do you like it? Do you like it, Scott? I call it Mr. and Mrs. Tenorman Chili.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Yeah, 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 yeah. I made you eat your parents. Yeah, 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 yeah. Jesus Christ, dude.
You all know exactly who I am.
I'm not saying your name.
You sure?
And I'll be glad to...
Say my name.
Maybe I should try listening.
That's right. Now, say my name.
It's Matt Coon!
You're goddamn right.
That's right, it's Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon, on the MLW Radio Network, brought to you by our good friends over there at WrestleZone.com, which I don't know if you've ever heard it before, but it is the most widely read news wrestling site on the planet. I'm Matt Coon, and we have a special show for you today. We've had a special couple past shows as well, yesterday's This Week in Wrestling. If you haven't heard it, go ahead and check it out. And of course, everybody's talking about our show from the day before. Matter of fact, some people I really respect and like reached out today about that particular episode. People maybe in a certain company. And I heard a lot of people in that company have heard that episode. I thank you all. And while you're at it listening to those shows, go ahead and listen to all our old shows. Every show is worth listening to again, I think. And then plus our Why It Ended archives. All kinds of interviews in there, all kinds of cool stuff you haven't heard anywhere else. But today we're going to start doing a little something different, some recurring segments that we're going to have maybe weekly or every once in a while. And we're going to start with what I call Crime in Wrestling. So I went to my good friend JP Zarka, who runs ProWrestlingStories.com. Recently, Meltzer tweeted that he dug his work. A lot of people dig his work. And he's going to be with us, I think, on a pretty semi-regular basis to talk about crime in wrestling. And the first episode is about Dino Bravo. So today on Total Engagement, tell your friends it's Crime in Wrestling, the death of Dino Bravo. So joining us today on a very special edition of Total Engagement is JP Zarka from Pro Wrestling Stories as we do our first segment of Crime in Wrestling. JP, how are you doing today?
Doing fantastic, man. It's good to be here on your show.
You're with Pro Wrestling Stories. You do a lot of cool stuff over there. Why don't you tell people a little bit about what you do over there?
Well, I started the site back in 2015. Everything that was happening off camera seemed a lot more interesting than what was happening on TV. So I would take a bunch of quotes from, you know, his book or shoot interviews that I was discovering as a result of reading that book and putting them together into stories. And I would post them up on Reddit, the Squared Circle subreddit. After doing that for a bit, I started the website ProWrestlingStories.com, where I ended up starting off with about 30 stories, and it really hit off from there. Sports Illustrated started sending out info about the site. I remember good old JR, Jim Ross, he had tweeted out about it and Bleacher Report. And, you know, it kicked off, and it's been something that I've been doing for the last 4 years. I love it. We've got over 35 writers. And, yeah, it's I think, you know, it's something that I'm proud of. And hopefully our listeners here are going to discover the site and enjoy, too.
Well, I want to get into some crime and wrestling stories. And I thought you were the perfect guy to do it with your background and your research. Sometimes when I have to research a story, all I have to do is go to ProWrestlingStories.com because you've already collated a lot of the information. Today, we're going to talk about Dino Bravo and the death of Dino Bravo. You said to me that you started watching wrestling the year he died. So do you have any recollections of Dino Bravo as a wrestler at all?
I remember... because I used to go on the weekends, we'd go to Blockbuster with my family, and I would always go straight to the wrestling section and the Royal Rumbles, and those were always the VHS tapes that I would get. I remember him bench pressing 715 pounds in the ring, and that was something I thought, wow, that's impressive. I don't remember much about him wrestling at the time when I was younger, but I came to know him through, unfortunately, the tragic story as I got older.
Well, with that bench press, he... might have had a little help from Jesse Ventura, but also there was not 715 pounds on there. Dino Bravo actually began wrestling in 1970 and wrestled for Crockett.
And we're talking about the pre-TBS era of Crockett, where he tagged with guys like Mr. Wrestling, the original Mr. Wrestling, and his trainer Dominic DiNucci, who also trained Mick Foley, among others. And he actually became quite a draw in Canada in the Montreal territory. He even defeated Gene Kaniski for the new Canadian heavyweight title, which I believe was part of the NWA. He even went to the WWF and captured the WWF tag team title. And he formed another tag team in the WWF with King Tonga. But as you know, as you said, we all got to know him in WWF when he debuted with his blonde hair and his strongman gimmick. He had a decent run. He did the weightlifting gimmick and went to be one of many of the world's strongest men in WWF. Following his WrestleMania 7 loss to Kerry Von Erich, he wrestled a lot less frequently. He basically retired and he started helping wrestlers train in Montreal, which is where our story picks up. So Dino Bravo, a guy with a long wrestling career, ends up retiring. He wanted to wrestle more. Turns out he wasn't needed some more and he retired. So what happened to him after he retired?
Well, according to Rick Martel, who recounts his story in an RF Video High Spot Shoon interview, Bravo was being used basically as enhancement towards the end there with WWF from 1990 to April 92. And Martel had heard that Vince wasn't going to sign him. And so Martel, looking out for his buddy, reached out to Pat Patterson to suggest that he and Bravo team up and make a tag team. Now, what he heard or what he had said was, I'll take the bumps and do all the moving around, and then Bravo could do the strong stuff. But what he got in return was, no, we don't think Bravo fits in with any of our plans. And so he was let go.
It's worth mentioning that Martel was a mid-card talent in WWF, but previous to that, he was, to a lot of us who are a little older, he was one of the three big champs in the 80s. It was Hogan, Martel, and Flair. And Martel was the AWA champion. So looking out for his fellow Canadian and even going to Pat Patterson and the powers that be in WWF, they said, we're no longer in the Dino Bravo business, right?
Yeah, unfortunately so. And Dino liked the high lifestyle. You know, he had a sports Mercedes. He had a big house. You know, all of a sudden when wrestling was over, he couldn't be a 9-to-5 guy. He didn't have any business experience of any kind, and wrestling was his whole life. And back then, the WWF was the only game in town. So he couldn't do when he couldn't do it for the WWF anymore, what could he do? Well, it turns out his uncle by marriage was Vincenzo Controni. He was the head of the mafia in Montreal, and he was also known as the Egg. And he was always saying, Dino, come work for me.
He was the Egg?
That was his name, the Egg.
What was his uncle's name again? Can you say it again?
Vincenzo Controni.
Okay, I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but that does not sound like a guy who's not in the mafia. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's got one of those mafia-sounding names there. Yeah, you don't want to mess with a Vincenzo Controni. But, he kept asking Dino, come work for me. And the Controni family was part of the Bonanno crime family branch out in Montreal. Now, it's obviously a pity that his life came to a sad end. He had a great look, but sadly, that was it, really. So Martel, when he was talking about this in a Shoon interview, he says when they were out in Europe, Dino confided in him. He said, Rick, I know I can go into crime and do really good money, but I don't want to go that route. I know myself. I know what kind of guy I am. Dino was the kind of guy who always wanted more and more. He knew himself and he knew his demons. But then when his debts and lifestyle got too much, you know, it got to the point where he actually had to borrow money from his mom, and which was a big hit to his pride. And then, you know, he had heard about the illicit cigarette trafficking happened in Canada at the time. Now, do you know about what's going on with cigarettes in Canada?
I've heard it is even worse than it is in New York City, where the illegal cigarette situation, because I would guess taxation, mm-hmm. is a huge business in Canada. And I have to go back to something you said. You said that he's part of the Bonanno crime family. We're talking about one of the five New York mafia families.
Mm-hmm.
The Montreal family is like a satellite version, a reach out of the Bonanno family from New York.
According to Rick Martel, the Bonannos were definitely involved.
and so this cigarette business, it's a big industry in Canada. So it's not that unfeasible that a guy with mob ties, a guy looking for work, could kind of be tempted by this lifestyle because there's a lot of easy money to be made.
Absolutely. Now, in Canada, between 63 and 79% of the price of a pack of cigarettes is tax. And from what I have here in my notes, in 2009, illegal cigarettes were believed to be a $1.5 billion industry in Canada. And so, of course, a lot of people on the, you know, on the dark side of things, and if you're in crime syndicates, they're definitely looking to make money via this. Dino ended up going to see the Indian tribes out there. Now, the Indians, they had the river. And so they could pass cigarettes across like crazy, or arms, whatever. And the Indians were big wrestling fans. So when they saw Dino come and talk to them, they got excited and they started dealing strictly with him.
These are Martel's words, but
yes, these are Martel's words.
You're saying Indians,
the Native Americans,
Native Americans. Yeah. But you're saying that these are Native American marks, and that's why they did business with Dino. Yep. Because they're marks, and they're marks for Dino. They're like, hey, it's the guy. I don't know why they have an accent like that, but they're like, hey, it's the guy who lifted 720 pounds with Jesse Ventura. We want to do our business with him. And the Native Americans had access to that river where they could smuggle in a bunch of stuff. But as far as, I guess, the distribution, they wanted to go with, an ex NWA Canadian champion.
Absolutely. And as a result of this, Dino had the monopoly with the Indians, and he started doing incredibly well money there. After a while, now this is according to Martel, the cigarette business was doing so great that the people that were in charge of dealing cocaine, they reached out and said, hey, maybe there's some money in there for us too. And so I don't know his name, but one of the big cocaine dealers apparently went to go see Dino and said, look, let me in on your cigarette deals and I'll let you in on some cocaine deals.
This is not going well.
It's not going well. He's going down a dark path.
You mentioned earlier he said he knows his demons. He knows how he is. I guess what Martel's relaying is that he knew that once he went into this lifestyle, there was no stopping. And then once you start making a little bit of money and they go, hey, you know, it's a lot easier to move cocaine than cigarettes. I guess once you cross that threshold of breaking the law, he knew that he was screwed, because now he is gone from being a wrestler to being a cigarette smuggler to now dealing in large amount of cocaine.
It's not good at all. And so what happened was there was an agreement made, and Dino had a $400,000 shipment in a warehouse somewhere, and it stayed there for 3 days. And on the third day, when the cocaine guy went to go pick it up, the police were there. And so they were blaming each other. And Dino was saying, you should have picked it up on the first day. This never should have happened. You shouldn't have let it sit there. And there was a lot of heat on Dino for this. And this was a week before he died.
And I know this from my expertise with drug dealing from watching Breaking Bad. Like,
right, mine too.
if you lose, like Badger, you know, if mm-hmm. Badger loses his bag or gets robbed, or actually Jesse Pinkman didn't have it, he had to go get his money. So it's almost like if you lose $400,000 worth of cocaine, you got to come up with the money. Now, Dino, I guess, owes people that $400,000 because maybe he was being flaky or whatever, but he just let that shit sit there. Now, I guess the story is there are people who think that Dino now owes them a lot of money.
And as we know, Dino was not a good money saver. He did not have the money, and he was in a situation now. So this was a week before he died. Now, a week later, he's in his house. Now, it's Wednesday, March 10th, 1993. His wife and his daughter, they go to ballet lessons, and he's sitting there watching hockey with a buddy of him, with one of his buddies, which they presume one of his friends was in the house with him.
So he's at his house by himself.
Yep.
His wife and his daughter out of the house. He's still married. He's got a kid. It's a pretty nice little Wednesday watching hockey mm-hmm. in Canada. Your wife and your kid are getting their ballet on, and as some people would surmise, he's watching hockey with a friend.
With the friend. Now, obviously, he was alone when the wife and daughter left, but they assumed there was a friend there as for what happens later. When the wife came home that night, she had their daughter in her arms. Luckily, thank God, the daughter was sleeping, so she didn't see her dad. What the wife had explained was that there was blood everywhere on the ceiling, and it was absolutely horrible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He had been shot 17 times. 10 of those bullets it hit him in the head. One of the rumors that I've read over the years was that actually they tried to shoot a happy face into the back of his head, which is absolutely terrible.
Okay.
I know.
Is that a thing?
I guess it is. Unfathomable for me, but that's, yeah, we can't put it past some people.
If we take away that bit of just terrible exposition about the happy face, the 17 bullets, like if I sit here and I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that is a lot of bullets, and 10 mm-hmm. were in his head. And that's, can you imagine the scene that poor woman, that poor fucking woman saw when she came home and she saw, like, she just saw a body. Like, she didn't even see a head. She just saw a body.
Bullets. No, just a body and 7 bullets in the torso. And it was terrible. It was absolutely horrible.
I'm no expert, but that sounds like a mob hit.
Without a doubt. Now, let me paint this scene now. So, of course, this is now in March. It's still winter. There was snow on the ground. So you would have thought footprints would have been outside, but there weren't any footprints at all. So what the detectives were able to surmise was that somebody, an inside person, somebody that Dino probably knew and trusted, was watching hockey with him. Now, said person probably looked over to Dino and said, "Hey, look, Dino, I'm going to go to the bathroom." And then they shot him from behind. So the detective who I guess Martel talked to said that the remote control was loose in Dino's hand. And when they shoot you from the front, you see it. So you tense your muscles. And then he would have gripped that remote control very tightly at the point of death. But because he was shot from behind, he didn't see it coming. And it was loose in his hand. So it's just an absolute sad and tragic story there.
Dino Bravo was a big dude, and it would have been very hard to take him out for the from the front. And you said that they thought he was with a friend, and that's because there was no signs of breaking and entering. That's basically,
yes, yeah, it was definitely thought to have been the person who was with him in the house. And you know, if they were breaking in, you would have seen snow prints outside. It wouldn't, you know, he just took the normal path, was led into the house. There was no broken blocks or anything from what I know of. So it was definitely a known and trusted person who'd done this.
Was there any investigation, any arrests, any rumors? What was the fallout from all of this?
It's still unsolved. They still haven't, and I think there's rumors of who people think did it, but as far as any arrests on, there's been none.
If it's not a mob hit, I mean, what else could it possibly be? A very intentional 17-bullet assault on the former National Wrestling Alliance Canadian Heavyweight Champion. He lost the $400,000. This was a revenge killing because I guess the mob, you can't do that to the mob because they have to make an example out of you. Is that what you think happened? Or when you look at it, how do you think this kind of manifests itself?
Well, I know that $400,000 was no longer going to be split amongst the people involved, and he was the one in charge of that deal. So I think when you've got a lot of people involved here, you gotta send a message. And unfortunately, the 17 bullets were the message. And so it's a sad story. It's absolutely terrible, but I think, you know, if you're hurting for money, don't get involved with the mob, you know, because they will do something terrible like this. And, you know, it's just, and it's interesting because people who knew Dino that were around him, he was talking like his days were numbered in the end there. And so it's something that he even got the feeling after that deal went wrong, he had a feeling things were not going to end well for him.
He did. He said something to somebody, right? That he only had he felt he was in his last days, or he had a few days to live or something like that.
Yeah. Bret Hart had mentioned, I believe in his book, that he was confiding to friends shortly before his death, that he knew that his days were numbered. So yeah, it was just something that he just had a feeling, and his feeling was correct.
And I think the lesson here is, and it's not isolated to just wrestling, but the lesson here is once you start breaking the law, you really can't go back, right?
That's right. I mean, look at Breaking Bad. How did things end for Walt? You know, Jesse Pinkman on the run right now. We'll see what's going to happen soon, but you never know.
Well, what I do know is that it's been a pleasure having you here for Crime and Wrestling on Total Engagement, the story of the death of Dino Bravo. I think we're going to have you back again. Would you come back again for another segment on Crime and Wrestling next week?
Oh, it'd be an absolute pleasure, Matt. And, you know, you guys can all find me online at JP Zarka on Twitter, or you can follow ProWrestlingStories.com on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Stories, or on Twitter at PWS_official. It's been a lot of fun, Matt, and I look forward to doing this again soon. And, you know, before we wrap up here, I know a lot of fans have been talking about The Dark Side of the Ring, you know, the docuseries that went out. Now, series two is coming up, and a lot of people are hoping that this Dino Bravo story goes into there. What do you think? You think it's going to be included?
Yeah, I think maybe we're beating them to the punch on a couple of these. That might be that might be an intent, but once again, it's how you decide to take in your media. You can read these stories on ProWrestlingStories.com. You can watch it with recreations on Dark Side of the Ring, or you can listen to it here on Total Engagement. And I can't thank you enough for joining us this week. And we'll see you next time on Crime and Wrestling.
Take care. Thank you.
What a fascinating story. I was clued in to a lot of stuff about Dino Bravo's death. And it is a story that I think can be talked about some more. It's unsolved. It's really provocative and tragic and sad. It sucks that you have a career and you have a life and people know who you are and you end like that and that's how people remember you. It's a terrible thing, and it's a story that needs to be told. It's a cautionary tale, and we hope that you were entertained and enjoyed listening to this history of wrestling, which, even if it's grisly, even if it's uncomfortable, deserve to be preserved and talked about and examined. And maybe through listening to stories like this, the same things aren't repeated again. But one thing that's repeated again is every single day Total Engagement. How's that for a segue? Best I could do. We are at you every single day, whether it's Raw reviews or SmackDown reviews or thoughts on the industry or once in a while something about wrestling journalism, maybe, or, you know, all the different kinds of stuff. This Week in Wrestling, getting Matthew on some watch-alongs. Please support us by listening every single day. Go ahead and subscribe on your podcast app and hit up all our episodes. You'll dig them. Let me know what you think over on Twitter at Matt Coon Music or on the show site at Total Engage Show. Lots of new subscribers on there. I love having you guys on. Thank you very much. Unless I see you at the matches, I'll see you next time. Right here on Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon.